In the heart of the forest, where shadows dance between ancient trees, a woman runs for her life. Her lungs burn, feet bleeding, as she crashes through underbrush with a silent predator in pursuit. This opening scene of The Sociopath isn't just establishing tension, it's introducing us to a primal battleground where civilization's rules no longer apply. The forest becomes both setting and character, a place where human beings are stripped of technology, comfort, and the illusion of safety. When Detective John Stanton wakes disoriented in this wilderness, he immediately understands the terrible truth. He's been chosen as prey. But unlike other victims, John brings something unique to this deadly game: years spent inside the minds of killers. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to use a predator's own psychology against them? This is John's only advantage in a contest where his hunter has prepared every advantage for himself. The killer doesn't just want John dead. That would be too simple. He craves the psychological chess match, the dance of fear and survival instinct, the moment when his victims realize their complete powerlessness. This isn't random violence, but carefully orchestrated theater with John as the unwilling star. What drives someone to hunt other human beings? Thomas Fisher's mind works like a dark mirror, reflecting human nature stripped of empathy. His sections are chilling precisely because they feel so rational from his perspective. Fisher doesn't see himself as monstrous, but as superior, a being who has transcended ordinary moral constraints to embrace what he considers his true nature. Fisher's appreciation for natural beauty exists alongside his capacity for extreme cruelty, challenging our comfortable notion that appreciating beauty and inflicting pain must be mutually exclusive. His development from childhood fascination with dominance to sophisticated predation illustrates how such pathologies evolve gradually rather than appearing suddenly. The most disturbing aspect isn't Fisher's violence, but his ability to function in society. Like many real-world predators, he maintains a convincing facade. How many people do we pass each day harboring unimaginable secrets? This question lingers uncomfortably throughout the narrative, suggesting that monsters don't announce themselves. They blend in until they choose to reveal themselves. What Fisher truly hunts isn't bodies, but emotions. Specifically, that moment when terror overtakes a victim's face. This psychological insight elevates the character beyond simple villainy into something more complex and disturbing. As John and his fellow captive Melissa navigate the forest dangers, they're stripped of everything but their most essential selves. Professional training helps, but John quickly discovers the vast difference between understanding predators theoretically and facing one directly. There's knowing about darkness, he reflects during a rare moment of rest, and then there's being lost in it without a flashlight. Their desperate flight through treacherous terrain forces impossible choices. Every decision carries life or death consequences: hide or run, split up or stay together, fight back or focus solely on escape. These dilemmas reveal character with brutal efficiency. John's professional identity provides some advantages, but also limitations. He's accustomed to operating within systems with backup and resources. Here, those structures have vanished. The waterfall scene crystallizes the novel's central question: what are we capable of when all options are terrible ones? Cornered by their pursuer with seemingly no escape, they face either violent death or a potentially fatal leap. John's decision to jump rather than submit speaks to something fundamental about human nature, that fierce, irrational hope that persists even when logic suggests defeat. John enters this nightmare carrying deep personal burdens, strained family relationships, religious conflicts, and the psychological toll of his work studying humanity's darkest impulses. The forest becomes both a physical battleground and a space to confront his inner demons. Exhaustion triggers memories of his father's warnings, colleagues' concerns, and moments with his estranged family. These flashbacks reveal how John's past both strengthens and weakens him in this ordeal. His mounting physical injuries mirror his emotional wounds, testing both body and spirit. His drive to survive stems from a deeper need. If I die here, he reflects, too many conversations will remain unfinished. The story weaves past and present into a layered character study. John isn't merely fleeing a killer, he's running toward potential redemption and the connections he sacrificed for his work. While fighting for survival, John connects his abduction to an ongoing investigation. Through detective interviews and flashbacks, he realizes his targeting was deliberate, not random. This revelation transforms the narrative from survival thriller to procedural mystery. John approaches crime scenes with a unique psychological lens, viewing the killer's methods as artistic expression. His focus shifts from collecting evidence to understanding motive, essential when pursuing a killer who defies conventional logic. The Tiffany Ochoa murder case demonstrates investigative blind spots. John uncovers missed witnesses and footage, while his interview with Tiffany's mother reveals behavioral changes absent from official reports, highlighting the value of family testimony. As connections emerge between victims and drug trafficking, the case grows more complex, illustrating how investigations typically expand rather than resolve neatly. John's recovery unfolds on multiple fronts, physical, emotional, and relational. The hospital becomes a different kind of battleground, where visible wounds often heal faster than invisible ones. Physical pain becomes a constant companion, marking time's passage and serving as a persistent reminder of what he endured. Psychologically, John battles what resembles PTSD, experiencing flashbacks and questioning his own stability. The metaphorical tunnel he navigates represents his psychological journey from trauma toward potential healing, not linear, but filled with setbacks and doubt. Family dynamics during recovery reveal both strength and fragility in his relationships. His son's touch awakens both comfort and pain, highlighting the bittersweet nature of connections he struggled to maintain. Melissa's reluctance to allow John time with their sons stems from legitimate fear about the shadows that follow him, creating poignant tension between professional calling and fatherhood. John's conversation with Emma represents another reckoning as he faces their relationship's dissolution with raw honesty. His request that she leave immediately rather than gradually shows both self-awareness and mercy, recognizing that prolonged separation would only increase mutual suffering. As physical recovery progresses, John faces profound choices about his future that will shape both his career and identity. The novel positions him at a crossroads, contemplating which direction might lead to purpose. Herb, the elderly neurologist who becomes John's hospital companion, serves as both mirror and mentor. Their shared loneliness enables honest discussions about life's disappointments, with Herb's reflections on love and loss helping John contextualize his struggles. The FBI opportunity offers John a professional lifeline with more resources and support, forcing him to question whether his pursuit of justice is worth the personal cost, or if stepping away might represent wisdom rather than weakness. The dawn light in final scenes symbolizes potential renewal, though the novel avoids suggesting recovery is complete. Instead, it shows that moving forward requires accepting both scars and uncertainty, portraying John's trauma as transformative but not all-defining.